This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You're listening to Farmer's Kitchen. I'm Poonam Verma. It is Foodie Friday, and once again, we've got food and more food for you. We start off with the founder of Natino. Her name is Melissa, and she has created her own cashew nut-based cheeses and spreads. Also, we have one of the healthiest ice lollies I've ever come across. It's called the House of Pops. One young lady decided to create her own tea brand when she couldn't find enough herbal teas here. It's called Brew Society. I also speak with the president of the Emirates Culinary Guild, also known as the father of chefs here in the UAE. And returning to Folly, Chef Bojan joins us live in the studio. And we also talk to one man who takes care of all the tiniest details, from the ambience to the furniture to even the salt and pepper shaker in the restaurants.
Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Now, if you're a bit of a nutcase, you're going to enjoy your food feature. Melissa is the founder of Natino Cheese and is with me now. And she brought some of her products in, and I've already been test tasting them all. Literally, there's about six items she brought in. I tasted every single one because I like to do my research. Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Poonam.
So Natino Cheese, the first thing I thought of, is it like Nutella? Is it obviously cheese? Is it nuts? What is it?
It's a cashew nut-based cheese product. So everything that we sell, we've got cheeses and also spreads, all made out of cashew nuts. So no oil, no sugar, nothing nasty. It's 98% cashew nuts.
So where did this idea come from? Is it because, I know a lot of friends say to me, I can't find really good vegan cheese. Was that the story behind this?
Yes, exactly. So I'm vegan myself, and I have searched high and low in Dubai for a tasty vegan cheese that's also healthy. So a lot of the vegan cheeses on the market, they also contain a lot of oil. And I wanted to eat something that would not give me a stomach ache, but also would be like super tasty and also healthy for my body as well.
So when you first made your first batch, like, were you just messing around? Did you look at a recipe or what?
Oh, yeah. So I tried many, many different recipes. I started off with cashew nuts and sweet potatoes. I did cashew nuts and tofu. I did.
Oh, you tried the whole lot.
I tried everything. I tried walnuts, macadamia nuts, the whole shebang. So I did many.
How long was all this experimenting going on for?
Oh, it went on for months, actually.
I
never gave up. Good for you. I was super determined to find the right recipe. And I sort of started just for myself. I wanted to make the cheese for myself and my family, and just something for us to eat. And then I experimented actually so much that I ended up bringing cheeses to my office.
Yeah.
Because I had too many at home. I couldn't eat them all. And, you know, gave it around at the office. And people sort of started to say, can I order this? Or my friend is lactose intolerant. Can she buy from you? And it's sort of like it went from there.
So out of all those experiments and the nuts, why did the cashew nut actually work? Because cashew nuts are my favorite. But I've always thought they were like quite a fatty nut. Are they?
So the reason why the cashew nuts work is that they're not very strong on taste. So the taste is quite mild and the consistency blends very well. So it gets into a creamy texture.
That's where they have the cashew butters, isn't it?
Exactly, yes. Yeah, and in terms of the fat content, it's the good type of fat. So it's not the heavily processed fat. And it's, when you eat our cheese, it's the equivalent of having like a little handful of 10 or so cashew nuts.
Yeah, no, and I've tasted it. Now, tell us all the flavors that you've come up with so far.
Yeah, so for the cheeses, we have a truffle cheese, a paprika and chili cheese, and also a black pepper. And for the spreads, we have chives and a garlic and rosemary spread. So those are more like a hummus sort of consistency that you can use on sandwiches, pastas, that kind of thing.
Yes, and I tried all five just so that I could give you an honest opinion, everybody out there. It's nothing to do with me being greedy. So let's start with the first one. What was the first one you gave me? It was my favorite.
Truffle.
Yeah, truffle. Oh, God. So when you open it, it actually looks like a beautiful round piece of cheese that's wrapped up. The packaging is very psychedelic and amazing. amazing. But you said there's like an Italian link to the packaging, right?
Yes, that's right. So the name Natino, it's a made-up name. It's based on nuts in English and Tino in Italian. So Tino in Italian means something like small and cute. So I wanted to make something that was English and Italian because Italians also, you know, very known for food.
Yeah.
And also the packaging is designed by an Italian designer.
And her husband's Italian, so and that adds to it.
Exactly.
Was he test tasting it too? Because they're known for their cheese.
Oh, yeah. So he is the harshest critic being Italian. And we know Italians are very fussy with food. So yeah, he tasted everything.
The texture of this cheese is actually really good. How would you describe the texture to if you had to compare it to another cheese? I'm trying to think.
It's sort of most comparable to maybe a brie or a camembert in terms of the texture, the softness.
That's exactly what I was thinking. And it looks like, you know how you get camembert wrapped, it's round and it's wrapped in a lovely paper. That's exactly how the presentation was. And it really is actually very good. And I'm taking mine home because I like it that much. And then I'm going to take, which spread am I taking home?
You're taking the chives.
Chives, yes. Oh, so good. Now, what's interesting about this is, you left your job of 7 years, I won't say with who, to continue this. Is this because it's doing really well?
Yes. So I didn't know exactly at the time. I did a bit of a pilot to make sure that there was demand in the market. And I wanted to test, was there interest? Would people buy it? What flavors did they like? So yes, I also, it was around about the same time that sort of documentaries were coming out about health and veganism. So there's What the Health and Game Changers on Netflix. It's also around the time that in cafes, they started to serve, you know, oat milk and different kinds of milk. So it was around the same time that there was a bit of an explosion in the market for vegan products. So, yeah, I wanted to test it first before I changed anything, just to make sure it was viable.
But you've been a vegan now for 9 years. So were you a full like meat eater before that?
No, I was always vegetarian. I've been vegetarian for over 20 years. But I didn't eat meat, but I really love cheese. Absolutely
Me
love
too.
Cheese.
I can't give up cheese, but maybe I find an alternative now. But since becoming a vegan, did you do it because obviously you had an issue with being lactose intolerant, or did you just want to become fully vegan?
No, I had sort of small health issues that sort of pushed me in the direction to be vegan. Digestive issues like lactose intolerant, that kind of thing. So I really wanted to feel like the best I could be and in the best sort of health and look the best that I can. So it really sort of pushed me to make that final step to give up the dairy.
Yeah, my really bad advice is a piece of bread and a piece of cheese. I could have one every night with a cup of tea. It's so bad. But now this is probably a good alternative. Who's it suitable for?
So it's really suitable for everybody. So obviously vegans and vegetarians can have it, also people lactose intolerant, but it's really positioned in the market for everyone. Even if you're a meat eater, even if you you know, enjoy eating everything, it's really positioned to be enjoyed by everyone. It's not just for vegans, it's not just for lactose intolerant. Anyone who can eat nuts, they can eat it.
So have you got more flavors in the works?
Yes, I have many recipes in my...
What are you working on? Can you give us a sneaky peek?
Let's just say...
Or is it secret?
It's secret, but let's just say another type of cheese.
Well, if you need anyone to test taste their samples, feel free to pass by here. I will be happy to do that. So where can we order them from? How do we find you?
So you can order direct from our website, which is natino.com. We also have Instagram as well. So Natino Cheese with a Z on the end.
Thank you so much, Melissa. You're not that much of a nutter. I was just joking. I really appreciate you coming on the show and good luck.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So the other day, one of my colleagues had an ice lolly in his hand. And this is no joke. I saw it and I said, that is the most beautiful ice lolly I've ever seen. And this is no exaggeration. It literally had real strawberries cut in half inside them. So I said to Milani, let's find out who they are and get them on the show. And I found out that they're called House of Pops, and they are on a mission to spread happiness sourced from nature, one pop at a time. And with me now is the man spreading that joy, co-founder Mazen Kanan. Welcome to the show, Mazen.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for hosting me.
Anytime. When you've got ice lollies like that, you can come on anytime. He's even bought me a batch, which is amazing. Right, where did this idea come from? Because, you know, it really is truly beautiful, and I feel like it's very natural and organic looking. Is it, though?
Yeah, 100%. So the idea originally came from the fact that, you know, there is an overall trend of health and wellness spread everywhere. When you go to the supermarket, you see the snacks island full of healthy options. But when you go to the ice cream, you still find the traditional unhealthy, high fat, high sugar pops. So we said that is an opportunity. So together with my partner, Marcella, we started 4 years ago in a small farmer's market here in Dubai. And as like I'd like to put it, we were the two of us with a small bike and a big dream. Aww. So this is how it all started. And now, fast forward, we are more than 70 people working in the company. We have some kiosks spread around Dubai and Abu Dhabi. We serve restaurants, hotel, we do online.
So what was the first batch you made? Do you remember the first flavor?
It was mango.
So why did you just think, let's just make it at home and put, because you can see them on YouTube, a lot of people are doing it. So it's like, what did you put in it? Was it purely mango? Did you add water? Did you need to add a little bit of syrup, something?
Yeah, so initially we wanted to make something healthy and clean label. So we wanted to focus as much to add as little ingredients as possible. So we put mango, we put water. We didn't want to use refined sugar, so we used organic agave with a dash of lime juice and natural fibers. And this is it. All our pops are 5 ingredients only.
What are the, really? Just 5 ingredients?
Yeah, like mango, water, organic agave, a dash of lime juice, and the fruit itself.
And because it's ice lollies, they can be in the freezer for ages, can't they?
Yeah, exactly. So the shelf life is 1 year.
Yeah.
But we believe they are really delicious. They would not stay for for that much in your freezer.
So I've seen the box. It's full of colors. It's like a little rainbow. There's everything from blue to orange to red. What flavors do you serve right now?
So we have 4 different ranges. We have one, the happiness range. This is mostly sorbets, where you can find single flavors like mango, mango passion fruit, lemonade, raspberry, strawberry, coconut, chocolate. And then we have the royal range, which you talked about. Those are come bigger sizes, and they are very Instagrammable with the real fruit pieces inside. We have a third range, which is a keto range, serving the people who are following a keto diet.
So what's in that? That's different to the other
so
ones.
So it's almost the same ingredient, but instead of agave, we use sugar alcohol, all right, which has a very low glycemic index, and it does not spike the sugar level in your blood. So it's safe to be consumed for the people following a keto diet. And the last one is an indulgent range, is some of the happiness popsicle dipped in 72% single origin Madagascar chocolate.
Oh,
so a bit on the indulging part.
How many pops a day do you have?
I mean, how many I eat?
A day.
I eat a lot. I eat a lot. Actually, it's funny. We have a small example that say if you take 2 watermelon pops from us, you would be getting only 4% of the daily recommended calories, which is around 60 calories out of the 2,000. However, you will be getting 70% of what WHO recommends in terms of daily fruit intake.
This is exactly what I was going to say. I am not a big fruit eater. I like fruit like a toffee apple. So it's got toffee on the apple, or apple crumble with custard. I like something added to it. So is this a great way for me to get my 5 a day?
100%. Exactly. 2 watermelon, you have almost 170 grams of fruits, which is almost 70% of the recommended fruit intake.
So you guys are really big on sustainability as well. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we were the only and first ice lolly that don't use any plastic packaging. We use material coming from plant starch. So our packaging is 100% compostable, biodegradable. Even recently, we did a partnership with Degrade, where our shirt, the shirt that the promoters are wearing, are made from recycled bottles of plastic.
Wow, you're really passionate.
So we really
about this.
Go all the way. The gas that we use in our freezers is R290, also has low impact on the environment. So we do a lot of initiatives when it comes to sustainability, because we like to call our brand natural, inside and outside, from the ingredients all the way to the packaging.
Yeah, it truly is, actually. And I hear that you're launching elsewhere. You've launched in KSA.
Yes. So after 4 years of doing business here successfully, we had a lot of interested parties, and we are franchising the concept. We sold the franchises to local partners here, but also we expanded into Saudi, where we already started the operation. We're moving into Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait soon. So hopefully by the end of the year, we should be across GCC.
So is your plan in the future to conquer the world one pop at a time?
Well, I would love to do that, frankly. And why not? You know, we have a good product, you have a good proposition. Yeah. It's going on the right trend. Why not?
I think it's great for kids, though. At least they're getting their fruit intake in some way.
100%. And this is where we have a lot of parents supporting us and to drive this, because there is no more compromise. You don't say, okay, fine, I will give my kid a lollipop, but then I will be compromising on his health. Mm. No, from now on with House of Pops, there's no compromise. You can enjoy a lollipop without worrying about the health part.
And the flavors and the choice and the experiments are endless, because there's so much fruit to choose from as well.
So true, so true. And this is also when people look at our range, they would not believe that, yeah, we don't use any colorings. But I always say that the nature is so beautiful and offers so many different colors that you can source from natural ingredients. And this is what we do.
So there's a bright blue one in my box. I'm saying it's mine because I'm not sharing it. What is the blue one? How has it got that color?
Exactly. So the blue is coming from spirulina, a blue spirulina. And it comes from the algae, this plant from the sea. So it's also a superfood. It's rich in iron.
Yeah.
Look, like you have a very impactful blue, but also coming from natural ingredients.
So I don't need the pharmacy. I'll just come to House of Pops.
Yeah, we should replace the apple soon, you know,
exactly.
One House of Pops a day.
No, five will be good, actually, because it's five a day. Remember that. Okay, thank you so much. And where can we find you online?
So you can order us from our website. We are also on Deliveroo. We are on Talabat. You can order us through the aggregators. And recently, also currently for the summer, we did a partnership with Costa Coffee.
Yeah.
And you can, they launched lemonades made poptails, made with our pops inside. So you can go to Costa Coffee and try our poptails there as well.
I love this product. I'm so glad you came on. And
thank you so
much.
You
bought me a batch as well in the green room. They're called House of Pops. Check them out. Thank you so much, Mazen.
Thank you.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Now, growing up in the UK, everything was made better for us with a cup of tea. It didn't matter if you were happy, sad, or even if your cat had just died. Every heartache could be soothed away with a good cup of tea. But today, tea has been taken to a whole new level and is being used for actual holistic and medicinal purposes. And our next guest is helping us all soothe our worries away with her line of teas called Brew Society, and that is spelt BRW. Welcome to the show, Laura Manning.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for the Brew Society teas. Friday's a great day because me and Helen always get some goodies. So I'm looking forward to trying this cup of tea. Now, there are so many teas on the market. So why did you want to start your own little brand?
Well, that's such a good question. I have a huge passion for tea. Growing up, tea was such a big part of my life. I have like the fondest memories of growing up and having a cup of tea with my family and sitting around the table and just
dipping
the world.
Dipping your biscuit.
Dipping my biscuit in my tea in my builder's brew, yeah. But such a passion for it. And I just love tea. It's such a huge part of my life. And when I moved to Dubai in 2018, I just felt really uninspired by the tea aisles here in the supermarket. They were very yellow in colour, and there was just not much variety. I think in the UK, we're really spoiled in terms of the variety of tea brands that are on the market. There are so many really cool and quirky and interesting indie brands out there. But when I came here, none of that was available. And for the first, I think, about 6 months, my mum would send me this lovely care package every month with all the things that I missed from home. And one of the things in there would be, you know, my favorite tea brands. And this went on for ages. And I got to the point thinking, what if I live in Dubai for the next 10 years? I'm going to bankrupt my mum on tea parcels. So, you know, this really had to stop. And it was around that time I just had this kind of light bulb moment that this gap needs to be filled. And, you know, there must be other people out there seeing this gap in the market and wanting to have better quality tea and more variety. So so Brew was born.
Yeah, I love all these homegrown brands because they all come from the need of the person themselves, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You needed it. Even our cheese lady, she couldn't find the right cheese for it. So it's always for a personal reason, and then you spread the joy elsewhere. So yeah. You focus a lot on herbal teas. So what kind of herbs and flavors are we talking about?
So we do have a massive love for herbal teas, for sure. But we have a complete range of tea. So we also have your black tea, your green tea, your oolong and your white. We have, I think, around 27 different varieties now of tea bags and 50 loose leaf teas. So we have quite an inclusive, you know, range of tea. But we really do have this love for herbals and fruit infusions. And we developed this range of what we like to call functional teas because they have some wellness benefit for the mind, the body, and the soul. And within these teas, you know, we use all sorts of ingredients, some, you know, really cool things like spirulina, moringa, you know, rosehip. There's so many. We use thousands of different ingredients, all with what we believe have some health benefit to the drinker.
What's your go-to tea when you wake up in the morning?
Oh, gosh, it really depends. I love all teas. So if, you know, I'm waking up and it's really early and it's a bit grey and dull inside, then I definitely need a bit of a hug in a mug. So I would probably lean to, I don't know, something like a milky oolong, which is really delicious and Moorish, but it has that little bit of caffeine in it to give you a bit of a pick-me-up in the morning. But if I jump out of a bed, you know, with a spring in my step, then I'd probably go for a green tea before the gym. And I tend to leave my herbals and fruit infusions to the afternoon. I don't drink any caffeine in the afternoon. I think that helps with my relaxation and my preparation for bed. So I really stay clear of caffeine in the afternoon.
So I'm really bad at sleeping. I just have loads of dreams and I'm always getting up and I never feel fully awake in the morning. What would you recommend? What kind of ingredients should be in a tea?
So to help you with your sleep in the evening, I would definitely suggest something like our organic sundowners, which was really developed with sleep, relaxation and unwinding in mind.
What's inside it?
So chamomile.
See, that's the thing. Yeah. I don't like chamomile. Is there any alternative?
Yeah. So a lot of people say that, but chamomile has such great properties. We try to team it up with others so you don't just get that chamomile
taste
because
yeah.
A lot of people say it can be a bit dull, right?
It is, yeah.
So we combine it with like lemon and verbena, for example, which is amazing for helping you relax and helping you improve the quality of your sleep. Yeah. So our sundowners is quite citrus, but it has all of those kind of chamomile and lemon verbena benefits in there as well.
Now, I remember doing a 3-day detox retreat in England, and the only thing they gave us was herbal teas.
Okay.
And I remember the first, I only have on average 2, maximum 3, like English black tea, right? Yeah. With a bit of milk a day. That's it. Within 24 hours of doing that retreat, my head started banging and everyone on that retreat said they've got headaches.
Right.
And I didn't realize that the caffeine, even from those 2 cups, were coming out of my system and I was detoxing it and the effect it had on me. But is caffeine bad for us? Was a little bit okay?
You know, I think everything in moderation, right? I think if you drink caffeine all day from morning till the time you go to bed, and then you completely abstain from caffeine, your body's going to go into a bit of shock. And I guess, you know, even though you're only having 2 to 3 cups a day, your body was really expecting that caffeine. And, you know, people who completely abstain from caffeine can feel the side effects for up to 9 days. You can get those headaches, you know, in extreme cases. So I think everything in moderation. I would limit the times of days you drink caffeine, limit it to first thing in the morning. And if you are used to drinking caffeine in the afternoon, like in your tea or your coffee, maybe replace 1 or 2 gradually with a herbal or a fruit infusion, just to lower your dependency on that, you know?
Yeah, because it's crazy because I know people who drink 7, 8 cups a day and I was like, I drink 2 or 3 and I'm feeling this. Do you drink coffee?
Not a huge amount. Occasionally I will have one. We are looking to actually develop coffee bags similar to our tea bags. So we are experimenting with that at the moment. But my go-to drink is tea and it would be a caffeinated tea in the morning and a herbal in the afternoon.
So tell me some of the ingredients that we should look out for you in your teas.
Okay.
Let's say if someone's suffering with PMT.
Okay, so if you're struggling with that, I would definitely go for one of our organic ginger and lemon tea. We have the marigold flower in there, which is great for cramps and for menstrual pain. So that's a really positive one for you to drink. Okay. if you're having that difficulty around the time of month.
What's a good one? Because you hear a lot about them for weight loss, and I don't know if they actually work.
You know, there's a lot of debate about this. I think I have quite strong feelings about it because tea isn't a miracle drink, you know. Yeah. If you're going to have 3 takeaways a day, you can't expect 1 cup of tea to remove all of that and help you lose 10 pounds in a week. You know, we do have a tea, Organic Reboot, which we recommend for a body cleanse or a detox because it has some really super power ingredients in there like spirulina, which gram for gram is the most nutritious food on the planet. It's also got green yerba mate in it, which, you know, is more powerful than coffee, has all the benefits of tea and the joy of chocolate. So it's a really special blend that mm-hmm. will help you get through, you know, like a body cleanse or a detox. But in terms of weight loss, I think, you know, you really have to look at your calorie intake and really look at your diet.
Yeah,
and
you can't have a cup of tea, detox tea with a burger. It's not
It's not going to work. But, you know, if you are on a calorie controlled diet, then you definitely could opt for a tea, like a green tea, an organic sencha, which has 0 calories. So you're not going to accumulate calories from your drinks. But it's also going to give you a little bit of power, a little bit of energy if you're obviously lowering your calorie intake and feeling a bit sluggish.
What if you've got a little bit of anxiety?
Which we all get from time to time, for sure. You know, there's definitely a tea that can help with that. Peppermint is really, really great for anxiety and can help, you know, calm and to relax you. Chamomile also is, you know, a great herbal tea for anxiety. But in terms of if you are feeling anxious, we would just really recommend that you don't have any caffeinated beverages. So stay clear of the coffee, of the black tea, because that's only going to really make that kind of anxiousness feel a bit worse.
So when I'm on air from like 2 to 5, around 3:34, I'm like, I'm getting a little bit of a slump. I need a little bit of a kick. And it's very easy to go to the coffee machine.
Yeah.
What would you recommend instead?
Try something like our Moringa Supercharge.
Supercharge, I like
that. Yeah, it's going to supercharge you through the rest of your afternoon. It has Moringa, which has more vitamin C than oranges and more potassium than bananas. So it's really good for helping the body heal. But it's also going to give you that little bit of a boost, and the citrus will give you a little bit of a wake up as well to really help you get through their afternoon.
So where can everybody find these teas? Where can we order them from? Brew Society.
Yeah, so our product is available on our website, which is www.brwsociety.com. You can also find our products in the supermarkets. We're on the aisles at Spinney's, Waitrose, Grandiose, Giant, Kibson's, and very soon to be in Carrefour as well. And you can also find us online at places like Amazon, Mum's World. I hope I haven't missed any, but yeah, we're quite active.
What were you doing before you started this, the brew?
So I worked for Tata in the UK for 15 years after graduating. Yeah, so
big career jump, eh?
It is a big one, but one, you know, I've never looked back. I love it. And when you know, you work with something you're passionate about, it makes every day just a joy.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate Laura.
The Chef's Table.
So my next guest, as soon as he walked in, we had Barry Manilow, and I said to him, we need to be dancing around the studio like behind each other because that's what this song does to you. But he's very relaxed. He is known as the father of chefs here in the UAE. Why? I'm going to find out. He's also the president of the Emirates Culinary Guild and an advisor at the Radisson Blue Hotel. Welcome Chef Uwe Mikkel, who's joining me now live in the studio. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Why are you called the father of the chefs?
I guess because I'm here a few years.
You say a few years, how many years are we talking?
5 months short of 30 years.
So that's not a few years. That's longer than most of us.
Well, when you're in the city, which you love, I think the time flies so fast that it feels like a few years only.
It's funny you say that because sometimes when I have to think, 15 years, where did that go? And you're right. When you're busy, you're enjoying yourself, life does flow very quickly.
Yeah, it flies. And another year. So as you see, when I came here, I came for 1 year. And I never, if you would have told me then that I'm still here sitting today, I would have asked you to go to a doctor to check yourself, because I would have never believed that I'd stay.
What, tell me, what was the culinary scene, if there was even one here when you first came?
It was very little. There was only, I think there was four or five star hotels. So very few restaurants. We made page one in, or page two in Khalid Shaiman Golf News when we did a strawberry promotion in the lobby. So I remember first time I brought a Michelin star chef for that time our restaurant, Le Ciel, when Alain Ducasse came. They Dubai TV came with me to the airport to pick him up, and it was a big show that time. A few years later, I did a promotion in my hotel with three Michelin star chefs, and we were not even mentioned in the newspaper. Okay, so it has changed so fast from really almost nothing to everything is there. So it became, yeah, it took many years that Michelin actually came here, but we always had Michelin star chefs invited to come for promotions, or they opened their restaurants. So it has grown so fast but it feels only a few years.
So you traveled all over the world. You're originally from Germany. You went to London. You've been to Asia, Japan, and then now you've been here for 30 years. When you first came, was there any local street food that was your favorite? You know, like you can go up to and beep your horn and get 2 dirham karak chai or something.
Still the same. It's still shawarma.
Is it still the shawarma?
It's still shawarma.
Have you ever a favorite place from 30 years ago that's still around?
Actually, my place in Dera is gone.
Oh.
But there was nothing for a few years, and now there is a shawarma place again. But it's different people, it's not the same anymore.
Good schnitzel places.
I have a new shawarma place now in Rashidiya where I go. So, yeah. But it's still very similar than it was. Only thing now, it's a little bit more about hazab and hygiene, so there is glass around and stuff, but the way they make it is still the same.
Still the same. So what, you're the president of the Emirates Culinary Guild. What is the Emirates Culinary Guild? What do they do?
The Emirates Culinary Guild is a UAE Chefs Association. We started, 31 years ago, or 30 years now, because the guild was founded about 6 months before I came, from a few chefs. And our main thing was to support young chefs, to support in trainings, to do competitions, to promote our city, our adopted city of Dubai or UAE, to the outside. We are traveling to other competitions, to other countries, and to promote ourselves. And our key thing is to develop young chefs, which has been improved a lot since 30 years. But we are still far from where I believe we have to be.
So when you're saying develop new chefs, are these chefs that you source from around the world to come and train with you? Or do they come here and they have to, like, is it like a school that they have to enroll in?
No, we're not talking about one school. We're talking about what we do in our hotels. We do competitions, we do trainings with the support of our suppliers.
Within the hotels.
And so on, within the hotel, in different hotels, within the school. Like, we're working together, a lot together with ICCA, the school just around the corner here. And we do a lot of trainings there. We have a scholarship program there for young chefs who don't have the money to go to school, to pay for school.
Yeah.
So we support them. And the great thing is we started this a few years ago, and we have quite a few guys now settled in Australia or in Canada, which is fantastic.
So as the culinary advisor to Radisson Blu Hotel, under your leadership, I know that there were many firsts here in Dubai. And what was the first ever family brunch in Dubai? Was that a concept that came up there?
I think it was, 95 or 96, around
that. It started there.
And around the time. Actually started when I was sitting with my wife in another hotel on a Friday for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we had 2 small kids. And then one of the waitresses saw that we couldn't eat because the kids were sitting and jumping on us. And so she took the kids on another table and with a piece of paper, and they started drawing. And that actually made me thinking, and that's how brunch was born. So I said to my wife, you know, if it's for us, there must be many others like us. So I went back Monday to the hotel, went back to my GM, and I said, I want to do a family brunch. And then he said, first, no, you're nuts. We are a business hotel. We don't have children in the hotel, which was true. At that time, we didn't have. Said, yeah, but Friday, we hardly have any people in the hotel. So then we sit together with the team, and our focus actually at the beginning was more the toys for the children than the food.
Yeah.
So food was easy because we had already then, we had so many restaurants, and we pulled the food from each restaurant, the specialties from every restaurant, from Shabbosan, Fish Market, Minato, and so on. And so, but our focus was, the main work was first how to get the games together. You know, you need for 3-year-old, you need different than for 7, then for 10-year, for 12-year. So from certain game, from games which is there, which was like playing football or flipper and all different kind of things. So yeah, we worked about 6 months on it, and then it was very successful. I remember then we did wheel covers for the cars, which it's called Friday Fun Food Festival, with a big smiley red and yellow smiley face. And then one of my sous chefs, he put a wheel cover on a police car.
Yeah.
So we got in trouble then. Because that time then you saw, wherever you went in a city, you saw a car with our wheel cover in the back.
Yeah.
Which was great. It was the best marketing tool on that time. There was no internet and no Facebook and stuff that time. So it was the best marketing we could do then. And yeah, it grew. And then first we copied it within the company. We opened in Abu Dhabi, in Egypt, and in different places within the Intercon groups at that time. And then in Dubai, the brunch started.
Shabbistan, which is an Iranian restaurant, one of the original and oldest restaurants at Radisson Blue Hotel. Are you renovating that in some way? Is something going on there?
No, there's nothing going on in the moment. Well, the biggest thing on the moment is we will be launching a new menu on 1st of September, but launching a new menu in Shabbistan means a few dishes only.
Oh,
it's
I
not
see.
Because the majority of the dishes are the same on the menu for the last 30 years.
What?
Yes. So
hasn't changed for 30
it's
years.
It's very traditional Iranian food. I have to go back for the day when I came, and Shabbosan was open, and there was then a young chef. He was already a father of children, but then he was the chef to party on, Chef Haider Shirazi. And I saw that he has got it to run it. So I asked my boss at the time, I said, I want to promote him to the restaurant chef. And we did. So it's like 2 months after I came. Then first I thought I made a mistake because he was the most difficult chef for me as an executive chef to work with.
Why?
Because he complained everything I gave to him. The onions were not good enough. The tomatoes were not good enough. The meat was not good enough.
Isn't that a good thing? He's quite a perfectionist. He wanted it to be
good. He was the best whatever happened to the restaurant. And that's why the restaurant is still in the same quality level there than what it was 30 years ago. Or actually it's more because it was, when I came, I think it was already almost 10 years open. I think 7 or 8 years open. It has moved from one location to another because it was very small before. But on the same location since over 30 years now. And yes, we have renovated twice or 3 times in between, new carpets and new ceiling design. But the menu, when we change the menu, I think the revolution is now that we change 5 dishes in one time on the menu. It's now. Because chef in charge now, Abul Fas Shirazi, he was 2 months ago, he was home with his father.
Yeah.
And he brought a few dishes back from North Iran now, which he wants to put in a menu. So it's the first time we change 5 dishes in one go. We have never done that before. Yeah. Normally 1 or 2 or 3. Because the people who come there, it's the same, you know, people come regular. And they want their dish. They want the same dish. And
I get it. And if it's working and they love it, why change it? You know, those traditional dishes are meant to be savored and just, you know,
that's what it means,
down
tradition.
To generations.
Yeah, that's what it means, tradition. Tradition means to keep it the way it was. To keep it, I think we are changing far too much now.
I agree. I feel like there's so much fusion and mixture, which is great, but sometimes just the simple essence of a traditional dish is lost as well.
I call fusion confusion in many cases.
Oh, I love that.
In many cases, because yes, there are great fusion dishes. You know, when you just add a little bit of a touch, you just add a little bit of a kick.
Yeah.
If you have a Western dish, you add a little bit of lemongrass or ginger. Sometimes it makes a big difference. It gives the dish more life. But a lot of dishes are really confusion.
Fusion is confusion. That is such a good line. Now, you, as well as cooking, you're also involved in a lot of CSR activities. What is Choose Wisely? What's that campaign?
Choose Wisely is a campaign which started, I don't know, about maybe 15 years ago or 20, when we had a big issue that we didn't have enough Hamos. The Hamo population went really down,
yeah.
Which is now it's back. So we have actually started using Hamo again about a year back or so. But WWF started that time.
So was it taken off the menu of a lot of restaurants?
We took it off completely of all the menus in the hotel.
You know, that's so interesting because I actually don't remember seeing it on a menu for the past 2 or 3 years now that you've brought it up. And it used to be here everywhere before.
It was everywhere. Then we took it off. Unfortunately, some people use the Choose Wisely campaign only as a marketing campaign. They said, yeah, they follow the campaign and then you went in a restaurant and you asked for Hamo, you got it. Or one of the supermarkets, they were part of the campaign and then they had a promotion for baby Hamo, which is the worst you can do on that stage. So, but it helped. Hamo is back. The population is almost back to where it used to be before.
Great.
So it showed that if the industry, the fishermen, the industry, government, everybody works together, we can make a difference.
Okay.
And we made. I was abused at the beginning when we took special in our fish market restaurant, which has all the fresh fish from the region.
Mm.
And when I took that off, I got abused by people. I said, why you take it off? And, you know, you can buy in the market. I said, yeah, you can, but you shouldn't. And then I remember I told an older Emirati guy who I knew for very well, I told him, I said, listen, I don't care about you, but I want your grandson to be able to eat Hamo again, not to say there was a fish called Hamo. And so he understood.
Mm.
And so we got a lot of support from our guests at the end also. And result is. When
That's
you go
great.
To the fish market now, Hamo's back.
That is great. Thank you so much, Chef UV. Can we rename you the Godfather of Brunches? Is that possible? Should we give you a new title? Or is Father of Chefs more than enough?
It's more than enough.
Okay, Chef, thank you so much.
You're listening to Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai Eye 103.8.
So sometimes in life, we come full circle, and that's exactly what's happened to my next guest. He is rejoining a restaurant that he has been with for years. So I'd like to welcome on the show, and I'm really going to try and pronounce this well, Bojan Cijanić. He is going to be the next executive chef of Folly from the end of this month. Did I pronounce that right, Chef?
Yes, you did, actually.
Bojan,
yes.
Bojan. How are you doing? In my head, for some reason, I thought you'd be much more mature. You seem very young.
Oh, thank you very much.
I won't ask you your age. Maybe you just look at it. So what was your initial involvement with Folly when you first joined?
Well, I've been with Nick and Scott for quite a long time,
yeah.
For almost 10 years.
Mm.
And I was there at Folly since day one, since Folly opened.
Where did Folly first open? Wasn't it the Madinat, was it, originally?
Yes, it was.
Was it?
Yeah, he was there since day one.
How long have they been there at the Madinat?
It opened in 2016, so...
I can't believe I haven't been to the one in Madinat yet. Isn't that really bad?
I think that a lot of people who live in Dubai look at Madinat as a touristic attraction.
No, I love it. I still love walking around there.
Me too.
I really
me
do.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been there since 2016 and I joined them after working for years with Nick and Scott as a sous chef of the restaurant. And a few years later, I got promoted to a head chef and that's where I was until 2020, until I left. And I spent some time in Europe, a little bit back home in Serbia, and then some time in France and almost the whole year in Norway. And I just got back and this opportunity just came almost out of nowhere. And
so did you think you'd be back to Dubai when you left?
I left in a way that I thought that's it, that I'm leaving Dubai for good.
Me too.
But then ever since I left, it never felt like I really, really left.
Tell me why. Why? Did you still miss it? Or was there something that you just... Did you not feel back at home when you were in Serbia?
I think I spent way too much time in Dubai that I got used to it. And I got used to it. And for me, this is like home now. And I did miss it a lot when I moved. It was a little bit difficult to get used to living back home and in Europe in general.
You know, I completely connect with you. And you know, it's funny because when I went back, I realized I had to get out and put petrol in my own car. No, it was. And then my mom said, "You're so lazy. You don't even go to the. You have to go to the supermarket. You can't just order it, you know, on InstaShop." Yeah. And we're so spoiled. And in Europe, it's very different, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And we don't realize any of that until we actually go back to Europe or wherever we are from. We don't realize those little things that we have here that we are very lucky to have here in Dubai.
Yeah, now Folly's been recognised in Dubai's first ever Michelin Guide. So what are you bringing to Folly to make sure that these achievements continue? Because is that a bit of pressure already on you?
Well, working in a restaurant, it's always a pressure. You always feel it. Obviously, with all this recognition that Folly got recently, there is a bit extra of that pressure on me. But I'm not thinking of that as an obstacle or something. I'm just my biggest worry now is to get back into the restaurant and start working with the team and make sure that the food and the service and everything that we want to offer to the guests is on the highest level possible, and to make guests happy. And obviously, if we achieve that, I'm pretty sure that we will please the critics from the industry and manage to get the recognition from the guides and other.
Are you responsible for coming up with a lot of new creations and things on the menu, or is it a teamwork?
Well, yeah, it will be a teamwork. Obviously, I think that I really believe in teamwork and people coming together to achieve something great. So obviously there will be a lot of things that we will be coming up with together as a team, because there is a lot of guys who are still in that kitchen that I've been working with before I left, and they're all very good at what they're doing, and I'm confident that together we will do very well.
So when you had your little sabbatical, you left mm-hmm. Dubai for good and then came back, yeah. Like me. Were you still working in the food industry as a chef?
Yes, I did.
So now that you've come back, have you got like new ideas? Has that inspired you to add some more things to the menu when it comes to Folly?
Yes, it did. I mean, obviously the food scene in Dubai is growing and it's getting better year by year. But it's always good to get out and see what other people are doing and experience other restaurants and taste different produce and go other places. So yeah, definitely, even though it was not easy to travel in the last couple of years, I was fortunate enough to be able to go to several different countries and work abroad. So yeah, I will be definitely bringing some of that experience and some of that inspiration to Folly and to the new menu.
And I always ask, you know, chefs travel all over the world and work in different places. What has been one of your most memorable work experiences, whether it's with a chef, an experience that happened, a dish that you tasted that you'll never forget, or the lessons that you learned?
Well, I think it has to do with different stages of the career. So I think that the first, the most memorable one would be working at the Ritz in London.
Mm. I've never been there either.
I was very fortunate actually to manage somehow to get to get inside of that kitchen to work there for over a year, and I was only 19 years old, and it was the first time actually that I traveled outside of my country.
And were you serving a lot of celebrities there?
No, I was just in the dungeon in the kitchen.
Oh, in the dungeon. Oh, washing the dishes, sometimes cooking.
Yeah, it was not easy. I mean, looking back at it, it was really hard. I mean, you walk into the kitchen where you have close to 60 chefs at the time, and my English was even that great at the time, so it was really challenging to keep up the pace with everyone else. But looking back at it, I think that was the
toughens you up.
Yeah, definitely. I think that that's where I learned and understood the importance of what you do and how you do it, and definitely It's stick with me even today. I use a lot of that.
I always think being a chef is really hard work, and even being in the whole hotel industry, because my cousin was in it, and he says you have to work your way from the bottom to the top. But I truly believe that makes you understand everyone's job and appreciate how you've got there.
Exactly.
If you're just given that job, then you're just like, okay.
Yeah, you have to pay your dues. Definitely. You need to work your way up, and it's a tough industry. But even though we're seeing a lot of changes in the industry lately, and there is a lot of more talking about how hard it can get, but you really need to understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, and then only with that you can go forward. There is no cutting corners in the kitchen.
No. So when are you starting at Folly? Have you started yet, or is it in a month?
No, I'm starting actually next week, but it will be... I'm starting just to... get familiarized with the team. Obviously, me and Chef Nick will spend quite a lot of time together for me to settle in and to take over a couple of things. And we're going to start working on the new menu and look at the new suppliers and the produce. So it's really exciting exciting times.
I have to make an effort now to come. I really do.
Definitely.
You grew up in Serbia, which is really interesting because you are the... I've only met three people in Dubai, in the world actually, my whole life, from Serbia. What kind of food did you have growing up in Serbia? Because I don't know much about Serbia.
The food back home, it's not one of those cuisine that is very recognizable worldwide. But the thing that I'm very, very proud of when it comes to food from where I'm from is that I grew up eating very, very fresh produce, and... until I actually moved abroad, I didn't understand that to the fullest, because you can see it even here when you go to the supermarkets and everywhere, and the food is it looks perfect, but it doesn't taste much.
And
that's something that we have in vast back home. And that's something, and everything is homemade. So there's
I know, it's like me, everything's homemade, and you can't beat homemade food.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, homemade bread that my mom would make it in the evening, it would prove overnight, and you bake it in the morning. So that's something that, you can't just buy in the shop.
Yeah, it's so healthy for you. So if there was one last meal that you could have on earth, what would that be? Would it be your mom's homemade bread or something else?
Probably, yeah. Definitely it would be something homemade.
Yeah, always is.
Yeah, because there is a lot of... it's not just that it tastes good, but it's an emotional aspect of it. So definitely, something from back home.
It's always because it's made with love, and there's a different energy in the food, I believe, when you make it with love.
You can feel the care that goes into the meal and... even the smallest detail of the
Well, I hope you put that much care into my dinner when I come and see you. I'll let you settle in, and then I'll come in a couple of weeks and go, right, chef, come on, what have you got on the menu?
Please do.
Put love in that. Thank you so much for coming on the show, chef.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Farmer's Kitchen on Dubai I 103.8.
He can relate to this very well. His name is Piero Giglio. He is the managing director and partner at Mine Lifestyle Dining, and he's on the show now. Hello, Piero. How are you doing?
Hi. How are you? All good. Thank you.
Very good. Tell me, what does Mine Lifestyle Dining actually do?
Actually, Mine Lifestyle Dining is an Italian hospitality company founded in Italy called Mine Yours. And then we expanded here in UAE and tried to expand internationally also.
So what is your day-to-day job, if you can describe it?
It's actually, we established the company here in UAE almost 2 years ago and try to find the right location, expand our brand internationally. So my day-to-day work is try to bring into life a new concept. And we just opened the latest new concept here in Dubai. So it's overlooking everything, actually, yes.
So when you're saying overlooking everything, are you responsible for the colours of the wall, the salt and pepper shakers, how the chairs look, the napkins, like all these little tiny details?
It's actually creating a concept. It's based on the location. Location, you create the concept. Of course, the design, it's a part of the concept development. So I'm involved on the concept of development with the designers, with everybody, including salt and pepper also, yes. Any single details, yes.
You're known for old school hospitality. What does that mean to you? What is old school hospitality?
You know, for me, old school hospitality is... It's very simple. It's when somebody comes to your house, and it's the same philosophy. I like always to make feel comfortable anybody comes to my house. That's the old school hospitality. Nowadays, the new hospitality company, not all of them, of course, you know, they focus in many other stuff, but the basic of the basic is welcoming the customers to your home. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Customer service is so important because I feel that if you have a connection with the waiter or the manager, you feel like you want to go back again and they remember your name, you know, and you vice versa.
Yes, that's it. That's what it is. It's very simple. It's just a genuine approach to everybody. Make them feel special every day and come back again to see you. And of course, the staff needs to have the same philosophy, and each one of the people involved, each one of the staff involved in the operation should have the same philosophy.
Yeah. Your new ventures are Nonna in DIFC and Lamo.
Chic Nonna, yes.
And Lamo. Chic Nonna.
Yes. Chic Nonna, yes.
And is it Lamo in Dubai Harbour?
Yes, Lamo in Dubai Harbour. It's a seafood restaurant. Yeah, it's in the new beautiful location and in the new harbour, Dubai Harbour, yes.
So are both of these places based around Italian Mediterranean food?
No. Lamo, it's mainly seafood restaurant with an aspiration of the whole coast of the south of Italy.
Nice.
Takes inspiration of, because most of the south of Italy, the seafood, the freshness, the simplicity of the ingredients, from the coast. Yes, this is the difference, mainly focusing on the seafood, the freshness of the product, and very simply close by to the marina, of course, the look and feel of the marina, the yacht.
And do you make sure that you source the seafood from the south of Italy? Do you try and do that?
Yeah, we try to source the seafood from south of Italy, a lot of from Galicia, Spain, because Galicia, Spain has also this beautiful fresh seafood. And then we source from, let's say, 50-50. Yeah.
So you're also an avid fan of art, fashion, music and culture. Do you try and incorporate that in the whole concept and the designs when you come up with restaurants?
Yes, that's what I like to do. Because I like to focus on what actually is the Italian culture is mainly focusing in art, culture, style, design, and bring everything together. And the food element, of course, it's one of the main, it's the main part, because at the end the customer goes to the restaurant for the food. But nowadays customer international wants everything. So that's what I try to focus, and I love fashion, the details, the look and feel of whatever I do.
Well, you are Italian, so they are known to be probably the most stylish people in the world. So you grew up, am I correct in saying you grew up in Puglia?
No, I grew up in Calabria, south of Italy. It's the opposite side from Puglia.
Oh, yeah. In the south of Italy.
Out of
Italy. Oh, I see. And what kind of dishes were on the menu at home when you were a small child? What was being served that reminds you of home?
Well, it's there are a lot of dishes, very simple dishes that they come from the garden. Mainly you eat some nice rigatoni pasta with a tomato. In south of Italy, where I come from, they use a lot of spice, but it's not really popular. Many dish from south, from Calabria, where I come from, but definitely it's the natural product from the garden, from the next door. You know, we used to do everything from our garden. So,
do you cook yeah. yourself?
Sometimes, you know, living in the restaurant industry, so I got the privilege to have the chefs cooking for me. So sometimes I do my best to try to cook a simple pasta. That's what I love. I love pasta, a different style of pasta.
Yeah. I don't know how Italians eat this much pasta and still stay fairly slim. Not everyone, but you still manage to do it.
Yeah, you can. You eat. The secret is to eat it during the day, not during the night.
But also, so I think in Italy, it was. I remember going to Puglia, that's why I mentioned it, and they had the orecchiette pasta, the like
yes,
ear-shaped.
Yes.
And she made it in front of me. And it, you know, when it's homemade, there's a different feel to it. It's not packaged and has been stored for weeks.
No, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. It's very simple thing. In everywhere, actually, in Italy, they do everything homemade. So
yeah.
It's the culture of how each one of us we brought up. So from childhood.
And is it true that your career began as a waiter? You were a waiter.
Yes, actually, I was a busboy.
Oh.
I was also a barback.
Okay.
Many years. South of Italy, yes.
So when you look back at your life, is there any advice you wish someone had given you back then that would have made the journey to where you are today maybe a little bit easier?
You know, to have a little bit of, how can I say, hospitality is a very hard work, and then focusing on what you want to do, and then anything is possible to achieve your goals. And hospitality today is a very hard work. You know what time you start, you don't know what time you finish.
Mm.
And first, each person, young person that he wants to start the hospitality industry should really focusing on build their own career with experience, with the knowledge, and then, after pretending good position and everything, because some today is happening the opposite way around.
It is happening the opposite way around.
Yes.
Okay. So are you going back to Italy or have you just come back? I know you go back and forth, right?
I haven't been to Italy. Last time that I was in Italy was in April,
yes.
In Florence.
Nice. Because you have one of the restaurants there too.
We have one restaurant just open in Florence. Yes.
Yeah, that's very nice. Okay, well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much. And we'll definitely check out Chic Nonna in DIFC and Lamo in Dubai Harbour. Thank you so much, Piero.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Make sure you tune into Farmer's Kitchen every Friday from 2 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.